Talk.
Always great to have our motoring correspondent, Chirita Siena, on the line from cars.co.za. He's standing by to tackle your motoring questions. Now, a number of them have come in the past hour by email, which is great. But a reminder, you can also phone us right now on 021-446-0567 or leave your question as a voice note on 072-567-1567. The other option is to tweet your question at Cape Talk or to send an SMS to 31567. Chira, always great to have you with us. Welcome to the show.
Hi, Pippa. Thanks for having me.
Let's start with the very fancy new car you've been trying out, the new Toyota Supra. Very, very flash looking. Chiro, does it live up to its looks?
It does. I'm very happy to report it does. It's a car that has caused an enormous amount of consternation and debate in petrol head circles, you know, mostly among people who can't afford them. And it's because it was a partnership between BMW and Supra and Toyota. And Toyota was looking for a sports car. BMW was about to build a new Z4. And so they linked up. And essentially, the Supra is a Z4. BMW engine, gearbox, chassis. All that Toyota has really done is designed their own version of it in terms of exterior looks and sort of fiddled with the suspension, changed a couple of the components under the skin. So it's been a very interesting partnership, one which I must admit I was myself quite skeptical about. But I think Toyota have actually pulled off something quite special, and it is one of the better sports cars I've ever driven, actually. They really, really nailed it. And it's quite nice to have a nice, exciting Toyota back on the road. You know, they're not a brand you immediately think of if you think of exciting, you know, dynamic cars.
Yeah. No, I mean, it's absolutely intriguing. The big question is it a Toyota price tag or a BMW price tag? How expensive is it?
It's very, very much a BMW price tag. Prices start at just under $1 million. The top spec one is about 1070. So it's not a cheap exercise at all. I mean, it is in line with the rest of the market. And, you know, I suppose it's a whole other debate as to whether the new car market has just gone a little bit insane, which I kind of feel it has in some ways. But you know, for what you're getting roughly right now, it is in line with the rest of the market. And it is the sort of car, in my opinion, that you actually could drive every day. So it doesn't necessarily need to be a weekend car, your third car, your fourth car. I actually think if you don't need to carry people around, because it is a strict two-seater, there's literally no space in the back whatsoever.
Okay.
And it doesn't have a particularly large boot, if I'm honest as well. You're not going to be able to get much in it. But, you know, if you're looking for an exciting way to get to work and back, I actually think it ticks a lot of boxes. So a very good effort by Toyota, I must be honest. And what they've done to change the suspension and the handling slightly from the BMW, for me, has actually made quite a bit of a difference to it. And I was very lucky to get to drive it on the Kalani racetrack, and I thoroughly enjoyed myself.
I won't ask what speed you got up to, but tell me this. Somebody's asking, is it better looking than a Z4? What's your opinion?
It's different. To be honest with you, I don't think either of them are going to win any beauty pageants. They're both quite challenging designs. The new Z4 is very different, and it's quite a departure for BMW, in my opinion, whereas the Toyota is also essentially a departure for the brand, but for me, a slightly more successful design than the M4, in that I think it conveys its intentions really well, in the sense that, you know, this is something a bit more special than your kind of run-of-the-mill sports car. And I think in that sense, the design of the Supra works a bit better for me.
Okay, so lucky Chira getting a look at the new Supra sports car from Toyota with a lot of help from BMW, and thanks for the tip-off. Let's go back to, well, another new car, but it's a new car that goes back to an old and much-loved model, the all-new Audi A1. I believe you've been given a bit of a sneak peek, because if I'm not mistaken, this hasn't really officially launched yet in South Africa, has it?
That's correct. Yes, Audi gave us a shout and said, would you like to film the A1 before it launches? And we said, yes, that would be very nice. So I went up to Joburg to spend a bit of time with the car. Unfortunately, the cars at the time were not legal for road use. There's a homologation process which needs to take place. So I haven't actually driven the car yet. However, my colleague did drive it overseas, and he raved about it. So prices start at $359,000. For the A1. It is essentially, I mean, if you're being cynical about it, I suppose, it's a Volkswagen Polo, really, in a sort of fancy dress. But there's something quite special about the Audi's interior. It's very, very upmarket, very premium look and feel to it. and it definitely does enough for me to distinguish it from a Polo, from say a top end Polo. Lots of customization options as well, which I really like. You can do a lot of different, you know, a lot of tweaks to the interior to customize it to your taste. And that's also quite nice. There's a special edition coming out as well, called the first edition, which is about an extra 35 grand memory serves. Okay. And that makes it look even more special. So it's sort of, if you can think of it in terms of, say, the Mini, in that it's, very sort of youthful in its presence and youthful, I suppose, in its, in the way that you can tweak it and customize it to your taste. And I quite like that about it, actually. And like I said, 359, it's actually a little bit less than what's out there on the market, which I actually think is quite impressive.
Okay, so how far away are we from official launch? I mean, when are our listeners going to be able to buy one, Shira?
The dealers are taking orders already. First delivery should be the last week of August, from what I understand. And the car will be on show at the Festival of Motoring, which unfortunately does happen in Gauteng, so not much use to our listeners, unless, of course, you're going to find yourself in Gauteng next week. Then it's probably a good idea to get down to Kyle Army. The Festival of Motoring has actually become quite a decent event on the motoring calendar. It's a good way to get up close and personal with some of SA's new cars.
Okay, thanks for the tip-off. Before we move away, homologa what? Somebody asked on the SMS line. Homologation. Won't you just explain what you meant by that term, please?
It's a process I've never looked into in too much detail, but essentially it is South African authorities checking that the car sort of has the systems, the safety systems, et cetera, that it says it does, and that it meets all the legislation requirements to be sold and driven on South African roads. Uh-huh. From what I understand, it's not a terribly difficult process in the sense that I don't think they crash the vehicles, for instance, like they do in Europe.
Yeah.
But it's basically just to tick a bunch of boxes, right? You know, it's got brakes, it's got a steering wheel, it's got flickers, it can go on the road.
Okay, fair enough. Thanks for the explanation. Okay. All right, with that, let's move away from the reviews and onto your questions. And let's start with the first SMS that's come through from somebody. Just a reminder that you're welcome to call in with a question on 021-446-0567. In the meantime, an SMS to 31567 asking, if money is not an issue, which would be a better buy, a Toyota Fortuner or a Land Rover Discovery Sport?
I know which one will probably give you less issues. I think they're different. They're very different cars, in my opinion. The Discovery Sport is what we would refer to as a unibody car. It's essentially built in the same way as a normal car, whereas the Fortuner is a bucky-based SUV, so it's a separate body and chassis, and they offer very different driving experiences. I would way more happily drive the Discovery Sport on a day-to-day basis. I find the Fortuner quite agricultural in the way that it drives and the way that it rides. It's essentially a bucky in the shape of an SUV, if that makes sense. I also find the Fortuner quite cramped inside. For some reason, the interior space is not great. It's probably, even though the Discovery Sport looks smaller, it's almost certainly got a larger cabin. And in terms of 4x4 ability, you know, if you're going to be tackling really rough stuff, the Fortuner is probably the one to have. The Discovery Sport does have a very impressive off-road system, but I would say it's a car that is less suited to the rough stuff. If you do compare it to a Fortuner, it's better than, say, comparing it to, say, a Toyota RAV4 or a Mazda CX-5, but the Fortuna is really built to do heavy, heavy off-road work and towing as well, which is important to a lot of people. In terms of resale value, I would say that the Toyota is going to lose a smaller percentage of itself, of its selling price, if you're going to sell it on the second-hand market, which is quite important to consider. But taking all that into account, to me, they are very different cars. So it's very difficult to give an answer either way. I think you have to look at what are your needs and what you expect from a car and make the decision based on that.
Okay, thank you. You've certainly helped that person make a more informed decision, though. I appreciate the feedback. Let's go to the lines and say hello to Tony in Seapoint. Good to have you with us, Tony.
Hi there. Thank you. Shira, I just wanted to know, I was in London recently and I hired a Toyota Corolla Hybrid. Will they ever come to South Africa? I spoke to the Toyota dealers here and they don't know anything about it. It's the most wonderful car.
Shira, have you heard anything?
It's a pity. You know, Toyota makes some great hybrids. I mean, they pretty much invented it with the Prius. And essentially that Prius technology, which has now been in development for probably the best part of 25 years now, mm-hmm. coming out of Japan, is used across their entire platform and their entire range. So, for instance, you get a RAV4 hybrid overseas, which to me makes a lot of sense. You know, you get an SUV with the incredible fuel consumption of a hybrid. The Corolla hybrid is essentially based on the Prius. Unfortunately, if you do want a Toyota hybrid in this country, you're going to have to buy a Prius. And the reason why Toyota doesn't really bother too much with it is that nobody really buys hybrids in this country, which is really sad. The market for hybrids is extremely small. And so, no, I don't think the Corolla hybrid will ever come, unfortunately, but the Prius is essentially the same car. It's just very, very unattractive. Sorry to Prius owners. But, you know, Corolla is a much better looking car. The new Prius has a very strange style to it. You know, you can get into a Corolla, into a Toyota hybrid, but it unfortunately is not going to say Corolla on the back.
Okay, Tony, thanks for the call. Sorry, it's not the answer you were hoping for, but it is what it is. Right, during the week, we had an email come in from Craig. Let's start with Craig and then go to Samantha's mail as well. Craig is coming to the end of a 3-year unlimited mileage service plan for his 2015 diesel Mazda CX-5. Sitting on 88,000 kilometers on the clock, he loves the car and says, I would like to take out another service plan, but it seems as if agents other than the manufacturer will be involved in issuing the plan. Can one shop around? Is a maintenance plan better than a service plan? And what happens to the warranty, he asks. Finally, is it a good idea to renew it, or would it be a better idea just to sell the car?
That's quite an interesting question, especially that sentence about agents other than the manufacturer being involved. And this is a part of the industry which I'm a little bit blurry on, if I'm honest, but I suspect what's happening is that Mazda's aftermarket service plan is underwritten by a third party, and he's having to sign the contract with the third party rather than Mazda. Okay. So, for instance, if I'm not mistaken, with a company, say, like BMW, when it comes to the end of your warranty period, you drive into the dealership, you say, can I please have a quote on extending my service plan and my warranty? And BMW actually quotes you. And perhaps with Mazda, and unfortunately I have no experience with this, but my guess is that Mazda doesn't have that set up, Mazda South Africa, and they outsource that to a third party. So the reality is that if he just goes to a third party himself, he might get the same deal or he might get a better deal. And yes, you can shop around. So there's Motor Happy, there's Hollard Warranty, SA Warranty, Motor Right, which I think has recently changed names, if I'm not mistaken. But if you Google Motor Right, it still comes up. So there's probably 5 or 6 companies which I would look at. I think there's actually a warranty comparison site now where you can enter your car's details and it spits out a couple of prices similar to sort of what Hippo.co.za does. And off the top of my head, I cannot remember what that site's called. But yes, I would say definitely shop around. And if the deal that Mazda's giving you is not satisfactory, you know, then there's nothing stopping you from shopping around and getting a deal elsewhere.
Okay, thanks so much for the feedback. If anybody knows the name of the site that Chira is referencing that does the warranty comparisons, just drop us an SMS to 31567. I think we can squeeze in a voice note. Let's take a listen.
Hey Chira, how's it going? I just wanted to know, Renault Clio Authentique, what do you think about the car, longevity, maintenance, that type of thing? Thanks. Cheers, bye.
Renault Clio Authentique. Chiro, what do you think?
Renault, if I'm not mistaken, offers a 5-year warranty. So if you're buying new, that's actually quite a lot of coverage. You know, well, 2 years more than our poor previous listener who only, you know, got 3 years with his Mazda. So I think 5 years is a nice amount of time to be covered. I haven't heard anything particularly negative about the Clio. The technology in it is fairly tried and tested now. The one thing I would point out with the Clio is that the engine is very small and quite low on torque and power. It's only a 0.9 liter turbo, unless you're going for the 1.2 turbo, which is a bit more expensive. The 0.9 liter, in my opinion, doesn't cope particularly well when the car is fully loaded. So if you are the sort of person who's driving a lot of people around with a lot of luggage, for instance, then I think you're going to be quite frustrated by the 0.9 liter, and I would go for the 1.2, which is a much stronger motor.
Okay, Chira, thanks so much. We need to wrap it up there. So Samantha and Nicole, we'll start next week with your emails. In the meantime, Chira, just remind us where listeners can follow you guys. Cars.co.za website, and you've got a YouTube channel as well.
Yes, I'd love you to check out the channel. If you just hit YouTube and search Cars.co.za, our channel will come up. comes up. We've got over 450 videos now. So if you're looking to research a car, there's a chance we've made a video on it.
And you be warned, you will be going down a rabbit hole. So set aside a chunk of your afternoon to enjoy there. Chira, always great to have you with us. We'll chat again next week.
Thank you.
Chira de Siena of cars.co.za. And a reminder that you can send a question any time of the week in advance by sending an email to pippah@capetalk.co.za.